Thanks, Rob. All right, on a couple of different levels, this is a really a really difficult class this evening. Difficult because the world has changed so much since the Roman Empire. And I'm sorry, somebody talking? All right, so the attitude of slavery in Rome was, of course, Rome was a very, I guess vicious would be a pretty good description of the Roman Empire, unless you were a Roman. They could enslave you, they could mistreat you, they could kill you, they could pretty much do anything they wanted to do if you weren't a Roman citizen. And so the concept of slavery in a culture like that, I think what God did in the New Testament is he spent a lot more time trying to help Christians deal with the oppression and difficulty and help them understand that this is not a stigma against you. But at the same time, what God does teach about slavery throughout the Old Testament is that sometimes it's a judgment from him. Sometimes it is a sin that the people themselves have done. For example, with Joseph, when they sold Joseph into slavery, that, of course, was a sinful thing that they did. On the other hand, God told the Jews, told Abraham, you're going to be a slave in Egypt, and then I'll judge the nation. So clearly he wasn't happy with the slavery, but he uses this wickedness, this wicked propensity on the part of man to enslave other people. Under the Old Testament, of course, he regulated it. And I put a lot of time in this morning on the first three pages, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it now. It's just kind of an introduction that I wanted to do for myself. But I think the bottom line is that we all have to wrestle with the fact that God has expressed himself on slavery, and we have to get ourselves into harmony with that. Even if our world is very different from the world they lived in, we're still Christians, and whatever the scriptures teach is the truth. And if whatever men is teaching today differs from what the scriptures teach, then we're going to have to work on that. We're going to have to deal with that. And as I said, at the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3, we have all the scriptures where Paul talks about slaves and slavery and the fact that if you are a slave, you have one option, and that is to be in submission to your master. And so that's the approach that Peter is going to take tonight. And of course, whenever I teach this, normally I talk about employers and employees, because that's all we have today. We don't have any of the servitude that they had in the first century. We don't have the people who sell themselves because they're poor, or indenture themselves because they want to be apprentices. We don't have the slavery in which people come in and steal other people. That's just not happening right now, at least in the world that we're aware of. Of course, that could change. And I think that's why this passage is so important, because we have to be prepared, whether we're an employee or whether we actually are enslaved. And I can see where we would really struggle with some of the things that Peter's going to be dealing with today if we were enslaved. So slavery, as I say, it's a hot-button topic today, and the scriptures are not exactly aligned with the view that most people have regarding slavery. So that's a thing we all have to wrestle through. Anybody have any thoughts or questions on slavery before we actually move into just the concepts of the servants and how they were to be submissive to their masters? Okay, well, like I say, it's a tough subject. You might want to read through this material and think about it a little bit. As I say, the scriptures are pretty clear that slavery is a something that the world is going to have, and of course we don't have a lot of it now, but it'll come back. It's just a sad reality. This is when vicious people become take control, then these kind of things can happen. But as I said, I think that the critical thing that we have to understand about all the admonitions about slavery in the New Testament is that God is a God of love, he's a God of mercy, he's a God of righteousness and justice, and he is trying to work out the salvation of as many people as possible. And during the days of the Roman Empire, this is the way that it had to be done. And that is that slaves needed to be in submission, and masters needed to, if they were Christian masters, then they needed to be taking care of the needs of their slaves. And so just like a husband and a wife, just like a government and a citizenry, here we have the situation with slaves and masters. And as Paul says to the masters in Ephesians chapter 6, that you masters do the same things to them. In other words, you treat them with the same care, respect that they are commanded to teach you. So when we come to Peter here in verse 18, I remember the context. Peter said we have to abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul, and we have to have our conduct honorable among the Gentiles. So these are the two criteria, and unfortunately, as the slaves were becoming Christians, some of the masters didn't like that, and some of the masters began to persecute them. I can't think of a more bitter situation than to be a slave to a master who hates Christianity, and there's absolutely nothing they can do except take all of the mistreatment that master could devise against them. And I'm sure there are some bitter, bitter stories that we may be able to hear on the judgment day where these people were really struggling. And so the Lord has some good advice for them. And as I said, if this were to happen to us, if in some time in the future we are enslaved as another country comes in and conquers and decides to send us out as slaves somewhere, then we would have to look at these verses and we would have to try to fulfill them. Well, not try, we would have to do this. And so, as I say, this is a bitter section, I guess I'd have to say. It's a very bitter section in the scriptures when you think about, number one, wicked people stealing other people, forcing them into slavery, and then when they don't measure up to their standards, being very oppressive and mistreating them, and just the oppression and the bitterness and the tears. But here's God's advice to them. And God's advice is that all servants need to be submissive. Now, just on a technical note, I'm not going to spend much time on it. You can look at it if you'd like to later. But Peter uses a word here that's only used about three other times in the New Testament. He doesn't use the normal word for slave. He uses a word that generally is used for the house or for a house servant. And so there's some question here whether this is just a synonym that Peter decided to use or whether this is a different type of servant. As you can see at the bottom of page 3, this is a servant who's a household servant. So this would be a servant who stays in the house. He's not the servant working in the field. He's not the servant who is doing other activities for the master. He's either taking care of the needs of the master or the needs of the children or the needs of the wife. And so these can be female servants, they can be male servants, but primarily these are servants in the home. And so there's a little bit of a lessening of the stigma here than there would be in the normal word for slave that is used in the Greek language, but not a lot. So this is a servant who is owned by his master. He is a servant who is primarily functioning inside of the home, of course, with close contact with the master day after day after day. Could be, you know, similar to what the people used to have in England with a butler and someone who was in the home and yet was indentured or was a slave. And so this individual has to understand, and that is that he has a responsibility to be in submission. So whatever bitterness or anger or frustration, I mean, let's face it, we as people have employers, and sometimes employers are rude. Sometimes employers are obnoxious. Sometimes they persecute. Sometimes they mistreat. And so I think we can relate to the terrible difficulties. Of course, the huge difference is that if I get fed up enough, if I get frustrated enough, I can just quit. We have that right in America. Now, some people can't, though. I mean, if you have a job and you don't think you can find another job, then you're just going to have to tolerate it. But I think we can put ourselves in their position in the sense that if we are in a horrible situation and we can't get out of it, and God says, you have to treat that person in a gentle and a compassionate and a submissive and in a kind way, that's going to be tough. That's going to be difficult. And yet, as I was going through the material today, I was just really impressed with how much power this would have if in fact we could actually do this. In other words, we could be mistreated and go the second mile and turn the other cheek and continue to treat these people with the same care and concern and respect as we did before they did any of these terrible things, then we would be manifesting. Matter of fact, where Peter's going to take us is you'd be acting like Jesus then, because that's exactly what Jesus did. So all that Peter is trying to do here is he's trying to help us see that we need to become more like the Lord. And as I say, we don't have slavery today, but most of us are employees. And we sell ourselves at an hourly rate, granted, but we sell ourselves to our employer. We clock in, we work our 8 or 10 or whatever hours, and then we clock out. And during that 8, 10, whatever hour period, we have the same responsibilities and obligations that Peter's laying out here. And so I think that's where this becomes so important to us, is to recognize that, you know, we don't have to debate slavery here. We don't have to wonder about all the different elements that we've talked about up to this point, except as a just an academic exercise. But when it comes to the practical side of this, we have just as much responsibility as they did. Anybody have any thoughts on that before we move on?
Yeah, this can. I'm just wondering, should I wait?
Wait for what?
Well, it sounded like somebody else was talking.
Hear it. Anybody else? Go ahead, Ken, and then whoever else, if there was any, they can follow you.
I was just realizing that Jesus was probably not a Roman. I mean, he didn't have it like Paul. And so he could have been treated very badly by people who knew he wasn't a Roman.
Well, yeah, and then he was. They couldn't do to Jesus. If he was a Roman citizen, they couldn't have done those. And you remember what happened when they were going to beat Paul before? And they found out he was a Roman citizen, and they all ran away because they were terrified, because that was illegal. The Romans had their rights, but slaves or captive citizens of other countries, they didn't have any rights at all. And so those soldiers weren't afraid to do what they did to him, the crown of thorns and the spitting and the beating. They didn't care.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Standard fare, I guess.
What's that?
Oh, standard fare for what, you know, somebody you wanted to mess up.
Well, we're just blessed. I'll tell you, you know, the rights that Americans have, we are so blessed in this country. It troubles me to hear about, you know, all these people who are talking about what a terrible place this is, when if they could realize that in all the history of the country, of the world, this has been the most freedom that any nation's ever been able to accrue to people. And so we need to be grateful to God that we've been able to be in this kind of situation. Was there anybody else? Ken said he thought he heard somebody. Anybody else have any comments?
Alan, this is Charles.
Okay, Charles, what's up?
Yeah, earlier you said something about the return of slavery or whatever, something to the effect right there. What about the brutality of, say, slavery? I mean, people that are living today would not tolerate, I don't care who you are, but I don't think that they would want to tolerate the brutality of what slavery was, of what it was when we were brought to this country, and that type of brutality. That you mean that it could return back in that way, that form and fashion, or just whatever? Or just how would you describe that?
I'm just describing what would happen if America fell to China or to Russia or to any other country. The people they didn't kill, they would enslave. And the people who were enslaved would not have any rights. And it would be, that which has been is that which shall be. So whatever happened before is going to happen again. If the world goes on long enough, we will see a return of all this brutality, Charles. And I'm just saying, you know, that this could happen. if we fall to a people who hate us, then that's what's going to happen. And it isn't going to matter what color our skin is, or the only thing that's going to matter is we're not Chinese, or we're not Russian, or we're not whatever country ultimately takes control. And, you know, we're already watching what China does to the people that it's over. And so if they could conquer us, and there's no doubt they wouldn't like to. So, you know, I don't know, Charles. I'm just saying that the scriptures are here. They're timeless. And we need to look at all sides of this and realize that that none of this is something that couldn't happen again.
Right. So in other words, the point is that all of us would have to have the type of mentality that Christ had. In other words, he had a humble spirit, and he didn't retaliate or anything like that. So what you're saying is that we would have to also take on the attributes of what Christ had, if that did happen, regardless of what the skin color is or anything else. In other words, that would apply to all mankind. It wouldn't be just like it was wherever it was when we were brought to this country.
Well, that is true. And of course, some of the things that we're seeing today, I think all of us could agree that peaceful protests are certainly nothing wrong with that. But this scripture makes it pretty clear that we just don't have the right to get angry and bitter and vengeful and desire to get back at people or punish people or change things through violence. But that's all of that is rearing up its ugly head. And as Christians, we have to stay above that. We can't allow the strong emotions that are going on in the country today to push us in a direction that we don't want to go in.
Okay, so in other words, a master, we're calling himself a master today, we also have to realize that also, too, that in other words, you don't put people in that position where they would do that.
No, if you're a Christian, of course, you're like God. And I can't understand how any Christian would not want to free his slaves. I mean, I could see myself as a slave owner becoming a Christian and saying, look, you guys are free now. Because that would be, to me, that would be mercy, that would be compassion. And yet Paul said that they don't have to do that. They don't have to let them go. And I just, as I say, we don't live back then. We can't even imagine what the circumstances were like that back then. So we just have to go with what the scriptures actually say.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Oh, no. Thank you, Charles. Anybody else? Okay, well, on the top of page 5, we have the term fear. And of course, I've often illustrated fear as if you see a tornado heading away from you, you'll feel reverence and respect. If you see a tornado heading right towards you, then you're going to feel fear and terror. And so this is a concept where if we are in imminent danger of death, then it becomes terror. But if it is something that is something that should be respected and considered to have awe and reverence. So we fear God, we fear the king, as we saw in the last verse, and now these servants have to fear their master. They have to treat them with the same respect and honor and treat them with the respect that authority has. And again, this is tough in America, you know, macho American man. And actually, it's not even just men anymore. Everybody has an attitude of, I have my rights and you can't do to me any more than what those rights would allow. And the turn the other cheek mentality, the go the second mile mentality in the workplace is a lot more difficult to find than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. And that's not a good thing. This mutual respect, the fact that an employer is paying you and is giving you this job, and God says, I want you to treat that with respect. I want you to be a person who has this reverence and respect for authority. Maybe not their authority, but God's authority. God set up all of these organizations and all of these institutions, and they function very well when everybody is doing what they're designed to do and what they've been told by God to do. And so in this particular situation, we have the employer-employee relationship, or as I say, in the first century, they had the slave-master relationship. And of course, slavery was an interesting concept. I mean, they had their stewards, and the stewards were over. I mean, it isn't like they were just mundane slaves out working in the field all day. These were people who were very educated and had great abilities, but they were still considered to be enslaved to this particular individual. And so God wants the slave to honor Christianity. So say before you become a Christian, you're a slave, and now you've become a Christian. God says, I want you to treat those people with the absolute utmost respect. And again, I think this is true on the job as well. I think this is something that all of us as employees need to factor in, is that, you know, people are watching. People are watching. They have good employees. They have bad employees. They have rude employees. They have pleasant employees. And when somebody becomes a Christian, I think that they have every right to expect that everything is going to improve. The relationship's going to improve. The respect's going to improve. The control of the temper is going to improve. Everything is going to improve once a person becomes a Christian. If it doesn't, then we're not reflecting with God. We're not reflecting the advertisement that he would like to have. When someone says, I'm a member of the Church of Christ, that ought to mean something. That ought to mean that here's a person who is respectful to authority, respectful to everything that God has demanded and asked for, and kind and compassionate, and we have to try to fulfill that. And so, as I say, the world then would have been slave and master, and the closest thing we have to it today is employer-employee. And so we can't just say, well, I'm exempt because I'm not a slave. I don't have to worry about this at all. I don't think that's correct. I think that which has been is that which shall be. And even though we've changed the names, like I say, when you clock in at 8 o'clock in the morning or whatever, until you clock out, you are that person's servant. If they tell you to do things, you have to do them. And that's what God is after here. So there needs to be this respect, appreciation. You know, somebody is paying me to live and to survive, and I should be grateful for that. And I should respect that. And I should treat that person just like this master here, with reverence and respect, just like we should treat police with respect, and just like we should treat teachers with respect. Anybody that's an authority figure in the world today, Christians shouldn't be treating them in a disrespectful manner, even if they deserve to be treated in a disrespectful manner. Christians aren't going to do that, because we respect the office, not the person in the office. And God has commanded that we respect all civil authority, and he's also commanded that we respect all, again, master or employer authority. Anybody have any thoughts on that before we move to the two different types of employers you might have or masters you might have?
Position versus a person. Can you recall where Mordecai did not bow down to the Haman, and it was that because of his position or because of the person? That's rhetorical also.
Well, of course, circumstances were a little bit different back then. What Haman was expecting was an homage that, for whatever reason, and again, we're not there, we don't understand it, but he was expecting an homage that a Jew could not give to man. And I don't really understand that. I mean, I don't have any problem nodding or bowing down to someone in authority. I don't know that I'd get on my knees for them, but I would manifest respect for them. But there was something, and again, David, since I'm not there, I can't give you the exact reason. I just know that Mordecai said, I'm a Jew, and therefore I cannot bow down to this man in that particular manner. So that's all I know about that. Does that help? Or I'm not trying to not answer the question. It's just kind of a... Oh. Okay. All right, no problem. Anybody else? Okay, well, there's two kinds of masters, and there's two kinds of bosses. And I'm sure that, you know, if you've lived long enough, you've seen both kinds. The first kind of boss is, or master, would be good. And like I said, I know the difference between a good apple and a bad apple. I know the difference between a good product and a bad product. And I think I have a pretty good understanding of a good boss and a bad boss, or a pleasant and enjoyable person to work for. They care about you. They care about your needs. They don't put you in situations where you are struggling. And so they're kind, and they're also, the next word is gentle, which is a qualification for the elders in both 1 Timothy and Titus. This particular word is put into both of them because, as far as leaders are concerned, God is very concerned about this. He wants elders and leaders to be people who look humanely and reasonably at everything, and compassionate and kind. As Aristotle said, that second definition at the bottom of page 5, to pardon human failings, to look to the intention and not to the action. I mean, a lot of times with kids, they do something terrible, but they didn't intend to. I always tell parents, you know, you don't spank children for accidents. You don't spank children for things you haven't explained to them in the past is wrong, because that's not gentle. It's not right. Like Paul said to fathers, don't provoke them to wrath. Don't do things that would be so unfair that it would make them angry. Well, the same thing is true here. And so if I have a boss like this, or a master like this, one who's caring and kind and compassionate and loving and doesn't lash out and doesn't make and isn't angry, what a blessing. What a blessing to have a master like that. And to have a master like that would make it relatively easy to be in submission. I mean, this is the kind of husband I try to be. I try to be the kind of husband that is always trying to do what my wife would like and not putting her in uncomfortable situations. And I think masters should be like that, and teachers should be like that. And I think police, and I think everybody in authority should be like that. We should be looking at our role as in authority as an opportunity to help and take care of the needs of the people who are under us. And so that is, of course, the best kind of a master. But there are, not everybody's like that. Even Christians sometimes struggle to be that good as a mother and father, or as a husband and wife, or as a master, you know, to be so caring and concerned about the needs of other people. That's a rare quality. And but as Peter says, it would be easier, but still not absolute. I mean, some people would be relatively bitter. We see a lot of bitterness in the world today. A lot of people who are angry and bitter about mistreatment. And of course, if they were Christians, we'd have to tell them, look, that's not how Jesus acted, and that's not how you're supposed to react. Yes, there's reasons for you to feel bitter, but you shouldn't, because you're not going to be a good advertisement for Christianity if you're acting like this. Now, the second concept here is and it's a medical term even in our language today. It's called scoliosis. Of course, scoliosis means that your back has been curved and crooked. And if you look at the definitions of the term, that's kind of the direction that they go in. Crooked, bent, or warped from dryness, such as wood, or something that's curved and winding and twisted and tangled. And when it moves into the moral realm, Peter used this word when he's told the Jews in Acts chapter 2, save yourselves from this crooked or perverse generation. And so that's the moral component to twisted. A twisted man or twisted mind sometimes is just devious, just looking for ways to make life miserable for people, giving them jobs that are impossible to do, and then beating them if they can't do it. And there's people that are like that. They're crooked, they're curved, they're perverse, they are froward is another word that's used here. They're wicked. They're a boss that is very difficult person to work with. And of course, You know, somebody comes to me and says, Alan, what should I do in this situation? I say, well, probably the best thing you do is quit. Well, I can't quit. Well, then what you're going to have to do is show them respect, and you're going to have to learn how to turn the other cheek and go the second mile and put up with this stuff. Because, like I said, especially in the Roman Empire, you couldn't run away. You couldn't get out of it. So there's only two options. You can either become bitter and angry and harsh and ugly, or you can become submissive and wait for the Lord to take care of it. And so that's the direction that that Peter's going in. He says, God wants you to be in submission. If they are good and gentle and easy to get along with, or if they're crooked and perverse. And of course, a lot of people, once they realize their boss is a very unpleasant person, they just start doing things. They're rude, or they're insubordinate just in little ways, or they stop working hard, or they start doing little things to make problems. There's a lot of ways that you can get even with people. There's a lot of ways that you can, you know, be bitter and angry and sabotage things. I mean, some people do terrible things. And of course, that's not a very good advertisement for Christianity. Not a very good advertisement. Like I said, we have to abstain from those fleshly lusts of anger and bitterness and vengeance. And we have to have our conduct honorable among the Gentiles. So that's the command. So if China were to come in and take over and make our lives bitter and harsh, that's what we would have to do. That's the command here. You say, well, I don't know if I could do that. Well, that's not an option. We have to do what God says, or we're allowing our lusts to take control, and we're not going to be doing what's right. Anybody want to add anything to that or have any thoughts on that?
Hey, Alan.
Yes.
You know, I was just thinking about trying to make some application today, and I think there is plenty of application, especially like you mentioned, husband, wife, employee, employer. I'm reminded of some of the teaching and even Proverbs that talks about the king and just how people in authority, leaders, whatever situation is, the Bible has lots of admonitions about them and how they can abuse, you know, their, if you will, their power, their authority. And of course, we see that all the time in a general sense, but we just have to be careful that whenever you're in those positions, that I often say, think back when you weren't in that position and how you felt about other people that are mistreating you. You know, the husband needs to maybe view things from his wife's perspective and an employer perspective. So there's so much. Some of this we can't obviously duplicate, but the lessons are there about treating people and you know, like you were saying earlier, just it's being a Christian.
Well, and that's a good point, Rob. We have a responsibility to be servants, to be humble, to be compassionate and merciful and submissive. And so, you know, one of the things that struck me this week in the study that we'll get into in just a little bit is that not only is the Lord's Supper designed to cause us to remember what Jesus went through, but after this class, it's also going to be an opportunity for us to compare ourselves to the Lord and ask ourselves whether we're doing as well as he did in tolerating all of that mistreatment and terrible things that they did to him, because he was the suffering servant. That's how he's described in Isaiah 53. He is described as someone who came to serve man, to suffer for man, and to die for man. And the unfairness of how the Jews treated him is far worse than I think any slaves ever had to endure. And yet Jesus is the example, and we're told we're supposed to follow in his steps. So regardless of how terrible the circumstances are, you know, with what we're dealing with at work or what we're dealing with in other positions of authority that are causing stress in our lives. You say, well, if he wasn't so harsh, I could do it. Well, Peter uses about the harshest, ugliest word he can find to say, even this kind of a master, even this kind of a boss, even this kind of a person in authority, we have to go past that. Anything else, Rob? Excuse me.
No, that, you know, it's easy when things are going well. It's when things aren't going well is where we're really tested.
Well, yeah, that's right. And
what did Peter tell the wife? Did he tell the wife that had an unbelieving husband, well, just leave him? You know, some brethren would say that. No, he said, you just conduct yourself in the best possible way and maybe you'll influence him.
Right. And I think that's really the sub theme of this entire section is what Jesus did to sacrifice himself to convert as many as possible. That's what we have to do. So Jesus was willing to say, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do, because he knew that he wanted to save as many people as possible. And we need to have that same mentality when it comes to the people who are mistreating us in various ways. And it's extremely difficult to do. It's extremely difficult because you feel, I don't know, our culture has just designed us to where we feel demeaned. If somebody mistreats us, we feel demeaned. We feel disrespected. And that almost always creates an anger and a frustration and a desire to lash out. And that's where we've got to control that. Jesus didn't do that. And if that's something that we struggle with, we're really going to have to work on that, because that's not a part of being a godly Christian. All right, anybody else on that before we move into verse 19?
Alan, I think you said, noting our culture today, because instead of serving, we feel, I should say, that it is thought that we come to be served, not to serve.
Well, that's an interesting point. But yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of employees think that the company exists to take care of them instead of the other way around. That's a good point. Okay, well, moving into verse 19 then, for this is commendable. Now, the concept here is that we have a God who is witnessing everything we do. And then, of course, we have sinful men who are witnessing everything that we do. And so with all these spectators, we have to think about how God is going to view what we're doing. And so in verse 19, Peter uses the word, and it's interesting, this is the word for grace, the word that Peter uses here, the word commendable. And I think if you've got your notes on page 7, or if you'd like to, you can turn over to Luke chapter 6, verses 32 through 35. But Jesus uses that. He says, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Well, that's the Greek word for grace. This is the same word that Paul used in Romans or in Ephesians 2, for by grace you've been saved through faith. Now, we normally think about grace as unmerited favor or a gift that you don't deserve. But there's another side to grace, and that's the side of grace that creates gratitude and appreciation on the part of the people who are receiving it. And so in this particular case, when God sees us doing something for someone that they don't deserve, then God sees that as an act of grace on our part, just as surely as what God did for us was an act that they didn't deserve. So now we have the opportunity to show grace to people who are mistreating us, just like God has done. So Jesus' point there is that if you only love those who love you, there's no grace in that. Even sinners love those who love them. Verse 33, if you do good to those who do good to you, what grace is there in that? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those whom you know you can receive back from, what grace is that to you? For even sinners lend to sinners. But love your enemies, do good, lend, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the unthankful and to the evil. So I think that's Peter's point here, is that it's commendable to God. It is something that God sees as an affinity to him. When we show grace to other people, he sees that as something to credit us with. He sees that as something to say, here I have some people who are like my son. Here I have some people who are going to respond with the same care and concern for that person's soul, who will set aside their own needs, their own desires, their own pride, their own sense of justice or rightness in order to try to bring about salvation for that person. So now that I know this, my conscience has to kick in. And that's why Peter says it's commendable if because of conscience toward God. So, of course, we've talked a lot about conscience. The English word conscience is exactly the same as a Greek word. It means to know with. Science is knowledge, and ko or conscience is the ability of something inside of my mind and inside of my soul is watching over all of my actions, all of my thoughts, all of my plans and intentions and emotions, and passing judgment on it. Like Paul said in Romans chapter 2, there at the bottom of page 7, they show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience bearing witness, and their thoughts alternately accusing or defending them. So if I do what I believe to be right, my conscience is going to defend me, make me feel good about what I've done. If I do something that I know is wrong, then that conscience is going to accuse me. And so the conscience is, once I know something, my conscience will never let me feel good if I don't do it after that point. And that's what Christianity is all about, is as you learn new information from the scriptures, you learn new responsibilities and obligations, now your conscience kicks in. And if because of conscience toward God, you start treating people better, you start treating people with respect, you stop worrying about what's fair and what's just, and you start worrying about what's commendable in the sight of God. And so now I'm going to become a different person. And I'm going to stop using my own pride and arrogance to determine how I respond to people. You treat me well, I treat you well. You treat me bad, you're gonna get it back again. That's the mentality of the world. But if it is commendable, it is an act of grace if because of conscience toward God we make this shift. We make this change and we endure grief, suffering wrongfully. So God is trying to help us understand there's nothing worse on earth than having a master who is wrongfully mistreating you, and you have to endure grief day after day after day, and there's nothing you can do about it except endure it or start retaliating. And Christianity doesn't allow retaliation. So even subtle retaliation, even the most subtle forms of rebellion or subtle forms of, I'm just not going to work as hard for this guy anymore. I'm not going to go the second mile anymore. If they want me to do overtime, I'm going to say no. They're going to get paid back for the way they've mistreated me. I mean, it's just something that is ingrained in some people's natures. And so God wants these slaves to understand you can't get out of this. So you have two options. You can do things that are going to please me and I'll give you a reward, or you can succumb to your fleshly lusts and damage your relationship with me and with those people. And so we have to be ready. And again, like I said when we started this class, this is tough. It's tough when somebody endures grief, suffering wrongfully, and I have to listen to it. I want to take action, but sometimes we can't. Sometimes this isn't something we have anything to do with. People are mistreated. It's just part of the life. And so it's commendable to God because of conscience if I'm willing to endure grief and suffer this wrongful or unrighteousness that can happen You know, like Solomon said, I think it was Ecclesiastes chapter 7, the oppression of the oppressors is just, it's such a bitter thing. You know, we read about this kind of stuff in other lands, Iran and China specifically, where laws are unfair and unjust for certain people. Yeah. So what do we do if we ever get into that kind of situation? We do what Jesus did. Jesus came into a sin-cursed world, and he endured grief, suffering wrongfully. We can do the same thing. So, this is pure Christianity. This is the very essence, and that's where Peter's going to go with this. He's going to say, look, this is why you were called. You could have never been called if Jesus hadn't done this. And so, what right do you have to say, I'm not going to do that, that's beneath me. I'm not going to do that. I don't care what the scripture says on this. Well, yeah, but Jesus did it for you. I don't care. I'm not going to do it. Well, what credit is there for that? What's commendable about that kind of an attitude? So we just all have to dig deep into our hearts and into our souls and take a good hard look at ourselves and see what kind of a person we are and whether we're someone that God's going to be able to commend because we were able to do this, or whether God's going to have to say, you know, I'm really disappointed. You had this opportunity and you didn't buy it up. So, as I say, this is just the next step in our growth into maturity, is learning how to be mistreated by other people and take it patiently. All right, anybody have any thoughts on that? We're about to move into verse 20 now.
Well, I can't find the verse, but there is something where Paul is actually saying that, this is acceptable to God when you, well, he just says what you're saying. I'm just looking for the scripture, couldn't find it. You probably know it.
Well, not with the information you've given me, Ken, so I'd be struggling just like you are with it. But there are quite a few passages where Paul talks about being willing to suffer, spend and be spent for your soul, and fill up in my own flesh what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ. And you wrestle through that, and you see a man who is willing to suffer persecution, mistreatment, or whatever for no other purpose than to be a blessing to those people that he's trying to work with. So, but I'm not sure the specific verse, Ken. I'm sure you'll find it later. You can let me know.
Okay.
Which? Go ahead and read it.
Oh, no, I'm saying, okay, I'll do that when I find it.
And that is exactly what we want to be a part of. We want to be part of that solution, not part of that problem. So, okay, well, let's look at verse 20 then. Ken, if you find that verse later, if it wasn't the one David just quoted, then you can chime in and let us know, okay?
Yeah, I wasn't able to hear David at all. I'm surprised. I guess some are...
Well, unfortunately, David is on my cell phone. He's listening through the cell phone, and so I'm putting the cell phone up to the microphone when he speaks, but if you guys can't hear it, then I'll have to translate for him. So, speak it in. Okay, well, in verse 20, Peter continues with this idea, and again, he uses the word grace again. He says, what credit is it if, when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? All right, so Peter's going to do two ends to the spectrum. The first is going to be being beaten because you've sinned, and the second end of the spectrum is being beaten because you've done what is good. And he says, there's nothing creditable, commendable, there's nothing good about the fact that you're being beaten for your faults. And so when when it comes to, you know, and I think I was wrong there. I don't think the word credit here is the grace. I think grace, that's going to come up later. This is a word that means your reputation. What good reputation is it? What kind of information or what kind of things are people going to say about you if when you're beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? Are they going to say, wow, that Alan, he's quite a guy. He beat somebody up, and when he got beat back, he didn't say a word. Well, that is not something that's commendable. When we do something wrong and we go to prison, or we do something wrong and we get mistreated for it, then there's nothing commendable about that. And so Peter, again, on this side of the perspective, or this side of the spectrum, here you've got a slave who is being beaten because he's done something wrong, and he takes it patiently. And Peter says, is that going to be something that people are going to commend you for? Wow, you're quite the man. You were beaten, but you took it patiently. But then on the other side of the spectrum, when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently. So, and then he says, this is commendable before God. And so as we ponder this, as we look at this, we have two choices. We can get angry, and we can lash back, and then we can be punished for doing what was wrong. Or we can take it patiently, and we can keep doing what God asks us to do and be punished for doing what's right. And so the choice is ours. I mean, we have to make that choice. Am I going to suffer because I've given into my anger, I've given into my frustration, I've lashed out, and now I'm going to be punished, I'm going to be beaten or mistreated because I did something wrong? Or I can turn it around, and I can keep doing what is good, and I'm still going to get beaten, but now it's going to be commendable. So I have to make the choice. You know, I can get frustrated and irritated at an employer or at a master and lash back out at them and get in trouble for it, and deservedly so. Or I can take it patiently and still be mistreated, and then it is commendable. And so this is the choice that we all have to make. You know, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles is not free. I mean, it's costly. It's very difficult, because sometimes we have to be mistreated. Sometimes we have to have these problem situations. And like I said, it isn't just master-slave. It can be employer-employee. It can be government, citizen, husband, wife, parent, child. I mean, this crosses all boundaries. And the same thing is true when we are doing what is good and we are being punished for it or mistreated for it, but we take it patiently and we endure it and we continue to act like a Christian, then God is going to say, this is commendable to me. And the reason it's commendable is given in verse 21. So before we move into verse 21, just does anybody have any comments on this two sides of the spectrum? You can get angry and do something wrong and be punished, or you can continue to do what's right and still be mistreated but be commended.
Hey, Alan.
Yes.
I was thinking back to even last week's study about the government. I think maybe that can be, you know, even what's coming up in the future. I just think even for, we may not see it, maybe our kids and our grandkids, about, you know, the suffering Christians are going to have with government. Now this, if you do any study, this is already going on in other countries. Prince could probably pipe in now and talk about some of the things he's having to deal with. But Christians have to resolve in their own mind and teach their children and grandchildren that there's certain things Christians are just going to have to do. Like, you know, we were talking before about worshiping and we have things we have to do, and we may have to suffer. We may have to suffer. And I think these are tough situations to go through, but I think we need to resolve ourselves, whether it's the relationships one to another, governments. I mean, there's so many lessons here, And we have to say, well, there's right and there's wrong, and I'm going to do what I have to do and suffer for it. You might have to suffer for it. And I know there's widespread applications. Everybody has to look at it for themselves and say, you know, we live in such a society where nobody, it's not fair, and nobody wants to, you know, things aren't just 1, 2, 3 ABC, and I can't put up with it. That's suffering I shouldn't have to do. When we stand for to be a Christian, you know, I think of the talk about in, what is it, 1 or 2 Timothy, or I guess it'd be 2 Timothy 3:12 about yea, and all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. If you live godly and you think I've never suffered persecution or I've had any problems in my whole life, well, I'm grateful for that. But I think if you're living godly, you're going to suffer. There's going to be, and then as we're seeing here, just stop and say, look at Jesus as the example. He his whole life was just a case of suffering and him being the example for us.
Well, that was the prophecy. He would be a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief.
Yes.
Here's the most perfect person that ever lived. The darkness hated it. And we're going to find ourselves in similar situations.
Yeah.
A lot of times when your boss knows you're a Christian, or when you're your situation where someone in authority knows you're a Christian and they treat you worse. So what does Peter say? Well, take it. Take it and be commended by God for it. So, you know, that's what we got to wrestle with for the rest of our life. You know, whether it's road rage or, you know, anger or frustration in a grocery store or wherever it is, you have to make that decision. Am I going to act in such a way that I'm going to be commended even if I'm being mistreated here, even if I am not being treated well? Or am I going to lash out and then get punished for doing what was wrong? So, you know, this is a tough section of scripture, and it touches all of us, and it forces all of us to take a good hard look, because like I said, Americans have their rights. We don't take too kindly to being mistreated. And so this is something that we all need to really take a hard look at to see whether or not we have this problem. Okay, let's just look at verse 21 for a little bit. I don't think we're going to finish this section. I definitely don't think we will. But let's just kind of sum up the class with this last point in verse 21, which is this is the reason you were called. The whole reason that I'm a Christian is because somebody else was willing to come and be mistreated for me. And now the question is, can I turn around and do that for someone else? Whether it's my wicked, ungodly, scoliose, curved, twisted, perverted master or employer, or whether it is a government that is not measuring up to my expectations of what a government ought to do. I mean, we're seeing a lot of that today. I mean, the people who are out there doing the things they're doing are not Christians, because God would never, ever tolerate the kind of disrespectful behavior that we're seeing toward the police and toward authority. It's just not right. Even if the policeman is scoliose, it still is for the love of God and the respect for the authorities that God has put in. We cannot allow this hatred, this anger, this bitterness to take over. As Christians, we understand the only reason I'm a Christian is because Christ suffered for me. Now, can I turn around and do that? You say, well, yeah, but if they mistreat you badly enough, then you don't have to do that. No, that's not the case. Whether the master is scoliose or twisted or perverted, or whether he is the most gentle and kind, you treat him the same way. Their conduct doesn't matter. That's why I said earlier, it's the position we respect, not the person. There are some bad police. I still respect the position of the police. There are some bad rulers, but I still respect the position of rulers. And I will still submit to them, whether I agree with them or not. And we've had to do that, and we'll continue to have to do that. And so But the main point here, and I guess we'll pick up with this next week because we are out of time now, but the main point is the only reason I've been called to be a Christian is because someone was willing to do for me what God is now asking me to do for others. And that is to come and be mistreated and be treated poorly and manifest a love and a respect and a care and a concern for them. So, all right, any other comments or thoughts or questions or anything on this?
Alan, there's a song that we sing sometime, and I'm not really sure just what the name of it is, but in some of the words it says, we have to take the wrong and do the right. And as we analyze this right here, I think the words of the song right there, I can't think of the name of the song right there, but that's just part of it right there. We have to really, really kind of think about that. We do take the wrong and do the right as a Christian.
You know, I can vaguely remember what song you're talking about, Charles, but I can't put my finger on it either. So anybody out there know which song he's talking about? Okay, well, we'll have to look for that, Charles.
Okay, maybe I can find it myself too sometime too.
Okay, that's fine. All right, anybody else? Well, I appreciate all the comments, and like I said, this was it's a very tough class, and especially in the environment we're in right now. So it's something for all of us to give some very, very serious thought to, whether the world is getting a hold of us or whether we're going to rise above the world and do what the Lord asks us to do here and be the kind of Christians that adorn the doctrine. You know, that's what he told the slaves, and I think it was in Titus, that if you will be submissive to your masters, you will adorn the gospel of God. And if you don't, you will create blasphemy for the gospel. So we have this responsibility, and we're going to have to shoulder it. All right. Anybody else? Okay. Find somebody here.